Here's John Duran, takes the shot, Duran! Oh, brilliant! Wow. Oh, my word! The 20-year-old kid from Colombia has just lit up Villa Park with a world-class finish against Bayern Munich. And just like 42 years ago, I'll say it again, Villa lead Bayern.
Wow, he's done it again. What a ball from Pau Torres, what a finish.
That is an incredible goal from an exceptional young player.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFerlin.
Hello.
Yes, back for another international break, the second international break of the season. Jan, it's unbelievable that it's rolled around so quickly, isn't it?
I know, it's great, isn't it? It's like one of those weeks at work that just fly by and suddenly it's the weekend all of a sudden. It's great. It's more than welcome.
Well, it is really, because, I mean, there is so much football on at the moment, so much, that actually the international break does feel like a bit of a relaxation, doesn't it? It does feel like a bit of a de-stress time, doesn't it, Terry? Because I don't know about you, but the excitement of the Swiss model, I mean, it's all like too much to take, isn't it, really? I mean, the number of fixtures there are now, and the whole concept of this massive league tables that they've got now. It's good that we've got this international break to decompress a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's an opportunity, for some coaches to use this as the opportunity to say, right, we're going to have a bit of a mini reset here after a less than ideal start to the season, and take this as an opportunity to sort of like reset, see if they can go forward. But of course, it does mean that there'll be some coaches who will be, as we discussed last week, sitting uncomfortably in their chairs, waiting for the phone to ring.
I must admit, I watched Match of the Day on Sunday morning, as I do, and poor old Gary O'Neill, he looked like a man who had pretty much reached the end of his tether as Wolves manager. He looked a broken man, and hopefully he can rebuild Wolves if he's still in a job by the time the squad comes back. And of course, Oliver Glasner as well. Still without a win. But Terry, any signs of encouragement from only losing 1-0 at home to Liverpool?
Not in the first half, no. In the first half, we were sat upon. And Liverpool, their XG for that first half was actually surprisingly poor given the possession that they had. I mean, you could point to Palace and say that they did quite well in keeping their opportunities down to a minimum. But I think it was widely felt that that was poor. The second half, on the other hand, was a significant improvement on the first and gives us an idea that perhaps, you know, this is working. Glasner decided to play Nketiah as a number nine, and I do think that there is a good reason why he didn't play that much as a number nine for Arsenal. And I felt that actually he would be better off behind a proper number, another number nine, you know. Another number nine, specifically JP. And once JP was on the pitch, Palace looked a much more balanced side. And I think they were a bit unlucky to not get a penalty. I certainly think we would be deafened by the squeals if it had been the other way round. But anyway, whatever. I don't think we deserve to win the game, so there it is.
Well, there was some good news for Palace this weekend for their women's team, who actually got their first WSL win away to Leicester, which was actually a really good result. So at least something to get Eagles fans smiling anyway.
Yes.
But yeah, I think at the moment, though, with Palace, they've still got players to come back, haven't they? Especially defensively. So hopefully after the international break, there'll be a stronger side, more like the team that finished last season.
I think Wharton's clearly carrying an injury and they're rehabilitating him. And so that's a problem there. Doucouré was former player of the year, defensive midfielder. He's injured again, but should be coming hopefully back in. I feel that that back three is what they want. Chalobah, Lacroix and Gehi is actually the Glasner's first choice, but it's the first time that they played together. And it showed, and Glasner was defending Chalobah, saying that Gaia had barely had a pre-season. So I think that there are definitely mitigating circumstances for Crystal Palace, and they've got a very, very good side. I think that it will turn around, which is more than I can say for Wolves, who have clearly had investment taken out of that squad. And Jonathan Lear wrote an excellent piece for it in The Guardian, actually, about Wolves, about how, you know, poor Gary O'Neill was being expected to do more, but with less. You kind of hope that actually they put him out of his misery, because I don't think that could be fun. And he's clearly actually a very good coach. I think it's a bit rubbish the way he's being treated. He deserves a club where they're actually going to build their squad on a yearly basis rather than suck it out.
Yeah, yeah. Gary O'Neill, people thought it was rough when Bournemouth sacked him, but he's now at Wolves, and it looks like the only reason they appointed him was because he was the only guy who was going to put up with them selling all the best players and not investing in the club.
It's terrible, because if you see Wolves down there at the bottom with Southampton, and you'd expect Southampton to be down there, given that they've just come up. But Wolves have been, feels like a regular in the Premier League for a number of years now, and to see them down there clearly is a reflection on how the club has been treated. And we've seen a number of coaches over the last few years bail early on them. They're getting the campaign that they deserve, unfortunately.
But, Jan, of course, your side, Sunderland, played on Friday night, didn't they? And they went into the international break, because they too have an international break in the Championship, with a well-fought point, didn't they?
Well, yes. But there's also a caveat to that in the manner in which we achieved the point. So Sunderland went a goal up with Chris Rigg, who is still wet behind the ears, I think it's fair to say, still only 17 years old, which was great. Good to go ahead early on against a team like Leeds in quite a passionate environment as well. The stadium light was full to the rafters, but within the hour, Leeds were 2-1 up. And it was still a fairly even game in every other aspect. As the game started to wind down, it looked like it was going to stay at 2-1. But a weird set of circumstances came into play where a ball was lofted, well, I wouldn't say lofted forward, but kicked forward by one of Sunderland's midfielders, Brown, and it took a minor deflection off one of the defenders and was bouncing towards Melier, the Leeds goalkeeper, and it just bounced right past him. I mean, it was comical. The guy just, you know, went down to take the ball as a keeper would, expecting it to bounce into his arms. And it must have taken a bounce off a bit of turf that was mislaid or been kicked up during the game or whatever. Anyway, it made, I think, a very competent keeper look really foolish. And it was in the 96th minute of the game as well. So, I did feel bad for him eventually I felt bad for him. I didn't immediately at the time. But like I said, it was a fairly even affair, that aside. And we go into the international break second now, because Sheffield United have overtaken us. But I'm very happy with that, 9 games in.
Listeners, if you're a cricket fan and you want to know what that goal was like, it was basically Warne versus Gatting. It really was. This ball was looping in, bounced just on a good length in front of the goalkeeper, and the goalkeeper would try to chip the ball over mid-on, and it just went past his outside edge and took out his off stump. It was perfect, basically. Try and catch that goal if you can. So that one was the first game in our box set, and there was actually quite a few good games this weekend, apart from, however, Villa versus Man U, which we'd really sort of like pinned everything on because the subject we had last week, talking a lot about Erik ten Hag. Erik ten Hag, who, as far as I know, is still in a job because he's had 2 draws since then, hasn't he, Terry?
He has unbeaten Erik ten Hag. He's still going. Yeah, I mean, I think did we all watch the Porto game? We were talking about it on WhatsApp as though we were watching it, but I was watching that. That was a decent game of football. I mean, that was what, the 500th game at the Dragão for Porto? So it was a bit of an occasion. That was a really, really good game. But I think we know more, a little bit more about what Man United are really like in this 0-0 draw. I mean, they were confusing and confused, I think. And I was surprised at how Villa were not... Villa against Bayern, they weren't standing for any of Bayern's nonsense. They knew that Bayern were going to come, big apex predator football club. They're going to come, they're going to attack, they're going to try and win the game. They don't care who they're playing. That's how they play. There is the expectation. And Emery's acute coach knew exactly how that was going to be. And he used that as a platform with which to go against them. And it worked brilliantly. And they won the game. And yes, I know it's a Champions League. And there was a lot of, I know the crowd was really behind them. It was a great moment. But it was actually really good football and really good tactics that won that game. And yes, all right. Wonder goal from John Duran, one in a million maybe. But, you know, nevertheless, this is the platform that they built for themselves and they deserved that moment of genius to win that game. Sunday, they seem to almost fear Manchester United. I know their record against United is atrocious, so maybe they have grounds to fear them. But I was very surprised that they just couldn't thought, yeah, no, we could have this lot. We had Bayern the other day and they're actually half decent. This lot are rubbish. We can certainly have them. And I was surprised. They had this whole thing where they're trying to keep back and trying to invite United to sort of like come forward to them so that they could play through the press. And then they didn't because they just couldn't. Maybe they were jaded after the events. I think the crowd were, strangely. I think the crowd was strangely subdued. Maybe they were gassed out from all the yelling and the excitement from the previous Wednesday.
Well, that result against Bayern was pretty special. Or was it? Or was it special?
Yes, it was special. Because it is Bayern Munich, but this current iteration of Bayern Munich is flawed. But for John Duran, that could well have ended 0-0, to be fair. But that is a game that I think earlier versions of Bayern would have won. I think they'd have beaten that Villa side because they would have had much better players. But yeah, this time Bayern played Eintracht Frankfurt and they drew 3-3 and conceded a late equaliser to Omar Marmouche, who we've mentioned in dispatches in the box set before as a player who is good and to be feared. And I think that as much as their attack seems to be in good shape, I mean, everyone's quite surprised at how well Olise has worked out at Bayern Munich. I mean, everyone knew he was good. But I think in Germany, they kind of thought, well, Palace is like a small, middle-class club. How's he going to do? Is he going to make the step? And he's completely made the step up brilliantly. But, they clearly have some issues at the back. Upamecano and Min-jae Kim are both individually excellent footballers, but there seems to be something wrong with the way that is set up. I don't think that's a company thing, because this seemed to be happening last year as well. So there's some structural things, issues that need to be resolved. But I would still suggest to you that beating Bayern Munich in the Champions League is a great result for any football club, and especially one that's making its return to the European Cup for the first time in goodness knows how long.
Yeah, in a smaller way, I think a similar result to when Arsenal beat PSG the other day. I mean, yes, this is PSG that doesn't have a wealth of global megastars anymore, but it's still a very, very, very well put together team and very well run. And Arsenal beat them pretty comfortably in the end. But I'm still not convinced about the format of the new Champions League. And it seems that quite a few people are looking at it at the moment and thinking, actually, this isn't any good. It's not as if, well, it needs time to bed in. It's more a case of, actually, we can see that this is never going to be any good. There is a feeling that jeopardy has left the group stage now. Have you felt that at all? Or are you still enjoying the games as they are and thinking, well, no, it's got big teams coming up against each other. One team wins, one team loses. That's how football should be.
Well, I have been enjoying it. There's been a lot of really entertaining football going on, which is just kind of why we're here. You could argue that there was a lack of jeopardy and a lack of anything really interesting going on with the previous format, with the group stages. I think that you would look at those group stages and go, well, before even a ball's kicked, I can probably work out where that's going to finish up. But there might be a little bit of a surprise. But the reality is that the bigger teams are going to end up going through. And I think that this does open up the competition to a little more jeopardy. Just to use the examples of the games that you both have cited, the Villa Bayern game and Arsenal against PSG, in the old format, they would have to go back and play those games again. So Villa would have been at the Allianz, and they probably would have got an absolute hammering for what they dared to do to Bayern at Villa Park. And they don't have to worry about that anymore. They've played their game, they've won it, they've recorded what I think it's fair to say is a historic win, and they can go on to play the remaining six games, knowing that they've got that one under their belt. So I like the change in the format because of that fact. I think Newcastle did it last year, didn't they? Because they played PSG at St. James's Park and got a draw, and then they went away and didn't do as good. Whereas with this format, their draw at home would have been well regarded, as it, indeed it should be, as was Villa's win and Arsenal's. So yeah, I'm all for it. I think that it is throwing up a few surprises, I think. And I don't think that looking at it now, it's only two games in. It is only two games in, so I think it is too early for anybody to be making calls on this, even me, because you know the remaining six games could be absolutely rubbish. But looking at it now, you've got PSG, as I mentioned, and you've got Real Madrid and Barcelona and Bayern Munich and Arsenal. I'm just looking through that middle 9 to 24, all sitting in the middle of the table. You know, after two games in the old format, would those guys have all just been sitting at the top of their respective groups and everyone would be going, well, they're through? For me, so far, so good. I'd like to see changes. It would become tired in a boring format before. Yeah, I welcome the change.
Oh, Terry, yeah, make some strong points there. Do you agree with those or do you have concerns or any issues with what we've seen so far?
I don't have too many concerns about the format, put it that way. The criticism seems to be that there's been too many unbalanced games and it's highlighting the inequities within there. But if you look at the top of the table, again, after two games, the team at the top is Borussia Dortmund, who are not on the top table of European football. I mean, they are staples of the European game these days, but they're not the apex. And who is second? Brest. This is their first time in the Champions League, and they are second. Benfica, Leverkusen, Villa are sixth. If you're judging a competition after two games, then look at the table and look at it and go, well, hang on a second. Why are all these relatively smaller teams at the top? You know, well, surely, you know, this is telling us something else about that. I wonder if part of it is because we think a lot of awful lot about it in terms of like from the British perspective. And obviously Celtic, you know, winning their first game 5-1 against obviously what is a poor Bratislava team and then getting destroyed by Dortmund at the Westfalen the following week. And pointing to this as one, as you know, symptomatic perhaps of the problems with Scottish football, but also more broadly the symptomatic of the problems with the Champions League. And I'm all on board for those kind of arguments, but I'm not altogether certain that we've got sufficient evidence to demonstrate that that is true. I think it is as likely that Brendan Rodgers made a horrific tactical error going to Dortmund and paid for it than necessarily it's because of the inequities between the German Bundesliga and the SPFL, which probably do exist. It's just if you're looking for reasons to dislike something, then I think, you know, you might want to just look at, try and get a little bit more evidence. Everyone's entitled to not like the Champions League and to think that it's just a cartel and it is unequal and ultimately all the same teams will go through in the end. But I don't know whether or not you can blame the format for that at this point. And I'm saying this because we have, and I have, you know, and I think we have been broadly optimistic about the Swiss model prior to the start of the competition. So I'm willing to give it a little bit more time.
I think more time is necessary just for people to get used to it. There's no point of harking back to the old European Cup because that's never, ever going to come back. It's just no interest from clubs for that model to return. It can't return anyway because there's so many more countries now than there were back then. I think in many respects, people just are not used to the way that this league will work. Well, I don't think people over in Europe are used to how this is going to work. I think if you go to North America, I think people will look at the new Champions League and think, well, yeah, this is how we've been watching MLS for years. A huge table of teams that may or may not play each other and basically playing all season, going through all these games just to get to a playoff system where half of the teams qualify anyway, which a lot of people would say, there's not a lot of jeopardy involved in this, is there? One team can be miles better than everyone else in the league stage and then go out in the first round of the playoffs. Terry, is it accurate to draw parallels with the new Champions League model and MLS?
Yeah, and with American sports in general, I mean, I think the key difference is the way in which the table is laid out. Obviously, in the United States, they like their conferences. They like their geographical conferences, often which, you know, are based upon old constructs, old league, like the American League and the National League and Major League Baseball. Effectively, that is, to all intents and purposes, a conference system. And they have a little bit of interleague play. It varies, but the MLS one is right. It's laid out like a conference, but again, not everybody plays each other twice. And then, yes, as you say, it all feeds into a much larger and elaborate playoff system. And for casual watchers of MLS, I would suggest to you that's when they start to pay attention to the league. In the same way that casual watchers of NHL or NBA or any other playoff-based system would approach it, it would be to wait until the playoffs start, because that's when it gets much more interesting. And I think that that's the truth of the Champions League, is that we watch the preliminaries because we're football heads, and they don't call them preliminaries, but that's what they are. They're preliminary stages to the main competition, which starts in late January. So I don't know. What do you want? If you want to massively reform the Champions League, I'm all for it. I mean, I disagree with you, Graham. I think you can bring back the old European Cup, but it obviously, you know, it would be harder to manage, but you can organise a knockout tournament with all of those teams. I mean, we have the FA Cup here. It starts in, January, doesn't it? Not the third round, the extra preliminary third preliminary round. I mean, we can do these things, but you're also right to say that there's zero appetite, because, like, who wants to invest all this money to qualify for a tournament that they might get knocked out by some French team what finished fourth, you know? I mean, nobody wants that. Well, I would like that, but no, you know, no one with money wants that. This is ultimately about whether or not the Champions League is a decent competition. And that entirely depends on how you feel about it. I mean, I watch it, but at the same time, I acknowledge that it's a bit of a naff competition, and it has been for some time. But once you get into the quarter with the second round and the quarterfinals and that, get into the playoffs, it's a cracking. I love it. Love watching it, because that's when it really matters. And usually that's when the best teams are playing as well.
Well, Jan, does Terry have a point there? I mean, Atletico Madrid got stuffed, didn't they, in their last match, 4-1. But is Simeone going, it's a long season, 8 games. Will those sort of results be what people are looking for in this group stage? Or do you think it will turn people off and say, well, yeah, okay, a defeat's a defeat, but, you know, it's a league and only 8 teams go out at this stage, so I just enjoy this because it's football, and then when the playoffs start, that's when it'll be exciting.
That's always been the case with the Champions League, as Terry just said, and it's going to be the case now. I'm quite enjoying it, only 2 games in, but of course it's going to become infinitely more appealing to everyone once it becomes a knockout competition. But just putting my enjoyment of it to one side for a moment, I mean, this format was created for a number of reasons. The big, I wouldn't say elephant in the room, but the big overhanging reason for this was to prevent a European Super League from happening, or at least putting it off for a few more years. And to do that, they've increased the number of games that the clubs play so that they get more revenue. And they've worked it out in such a way that the bigger clubs do play each other a couple of times during that, just to keep everyone's interest up. And that seems like, so far, so good. The reality is that this is a competition designed to generate lots and lots and lots of revenue for the people taking part in it. And what businesses want is some kind of stability and predictability in terms of their revenues. And that's exactly what this model delivers, if we want to look at it in a cold-hearted, dry economic way. But something I think had to be done about the way that the group stages were dealt with in the past, because it wasn't good for the consumer. It clearly wasn't good for the money men. So maybe this is a good halfway house on that. But one point on the Jeopardy is that the seeding for the next round actually does take into account the performance in this set of fixtures as well. So it is important to not just to chuck out your third choice team and just take a hiding in a game that you don't really care about, because it is important to get the results in to ensure that you're seeded in the next round. There's a lot of compromise, but, you know, what else are you going to do if you're going to have a runaway Super League and no domestic football?
There is a distinct advantage if you finish in the top 8, because you don't have to play an extra round. But really, between teams that finished 9th and teams that finished 24th, they've effectively got the same thing for going through their whole league season. That strikes me as something that, although there is advantage to playing well, Brest are not going to be in that top eight. Dortmund might. Dortmund actually got to the final of the damn thing last season. So they are a decent side. No matter what. Yes. All right. Terry looks a bit too closely at them. But I think in future, I think if you want to put some real jeopardy in there, have that playoff round that immediately comes out as a one-legged game. And have the team that finished 9th to 16th as the home team and the team that finished 17th to 24th as the away team. That would have some jeopardy. I think that could be a better way of going forward. Obviously, it's up to the money men to decide. If it ended up that Real Madrid ended up in that bit, then they'll say, no, we'll have a two-legged decider there, please.
The other thing you could also do, in addition to what you've just said, you could introduce buys into a later stage, as they do in other sports. Well, the A-League does this, doesn't it? The winners of the league ladder, they get a buy to the semi-final, I think.
Yeah, the top eight get a buy.
Yeah, but only to the next round.
The round of 16, yeah.
Give them a buy to the quarterfinal. Give the top four a buy to the quarterfinal. Something like that. But of course, you know, they're not going to do that. Because the whole point of this is to create more fixtures. It's not to introduce more competition and make the game more exciting. And you know, I mean, we're putting a brave face on it, but let's be honest with you, that is the point of this exercise. And ultimately, that's why it's difficult to defend, because that is the naked truth of it. What I am saying, however, is that as a format, I think it still bears, you know, a little bit further scrutiny before we can be too judgmental about whether or not it is successful. I mean, ultimately, I think if they introduce some genuine peril into this competition, they could do it. And then the best teams would really have to bring out their best rather than think that they could maybe, well, I don't know, coast, maybe the wrong word, but certainly, you know, rotate their squad or maybe not be quite so worried about, you know, it'll take a lot of the pressure out of the early fixtures if they know that, you know, it's more of a league and they've got more time to play with. Whereas if you really introduce some jeopardy in there, then you might get a good competition out of it. But yeah, I mean, it is difficult. I'm reluctant to curse the Swiss model, but ultimately the Champions League is an unsatisfactory competition, but it has been for many years now.
Yeah,
that's
certainly
not breaking news.
No, it's not. Mm. Terry, you'll know this. A few years ago, we had Richard Whittle on the podcast. He's Canadian and a big NHL fan. We spoke to him about the NHL and about watching it and getting into it. And he said that you only watch the regular season if you want to see fights, because that's the only time you ever get fights in there, is in the regular season. Once it gets to the playoff stage, it's all serious. You don't see the fights anymore. Maybe that's what we can look forward to. Maybe that's what we should have more in this Swiss stage. Just fights. Throw the gloves off and then like steaming into each other. I think this is what we'll have to get. And to be fair, the reason that those things happen is to make it more watchable. And I think on a serious note, you can't just roll a turd in glitter. People are still going to know what it is. And if the viewers' rates drop, then they'll have to do something with it. And especially if the revenues drop, because that's what the whole thing is here for. So it's got to be entertaining some way. But yeah, fights.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of fights. And they have a card amnesty as well, sort of like at the end of so going into the playoffs. So you can say, right, you can get into as many fights as you can and they're ready to go, but there's a card amnesty and so you can go straight in there. I think that that's a plan with few drawbacks. Sure, there's a few things that I'm missing, but anyway.
After this, we can workshop a few ideas. I think theme weeks in the Smiths model.
It's interesting because, of course, like in American sports, they will, because they play like in baseball, they play loads and loads of fixtures.
Yeah.
And they do have theme days, don't they? They have specific, not related to the sport, but just to the event. You know, they will, you know, they'll make it so that it's a little bit more interesting and exciting. This not for people to watch on the television, but for people, but in order to sell tickets. This is a symptomatic of a bloated fixture schedule that is there largely at the behest of the club owners, who want to generate as much revenue as possible. To an extent, the players, you know, recognize that the more sport they play, the more they work they do, the more they get paid. And to an extent, I would imagine also the TV companies, and this is in the, like, you know, traditional US sports, such as baseball, where they have loads and loads of fixtures, unlike the NFL, which has hardly any fixtures. It starts in September, it's finished in February. And every game is a massive event there. And every game, you'd have to say, probably actually means something. I think, you know, the choice between NHL-style fights and NFL style reduced fixture lists, I suspect they'll go for the NHL. But maybe they should go for the NFL. But maybe it would be a good idea to not follow either of those models.
Maybe. But what we're saying is that the Swiss model, it's not great, but then again, it's not got much to work with, is it? Because
it is, after all, Swiss.
Well, yes, but I suppose next thing is they're going to look at this and say, well, this is what the Nations League should become. And Jan, you'll look forward to that, won't you?
Yeah, I'm all over international football, Graham, as you know. I love it. It's second on my list after motor racing.
Well, yeah, we've got some Nations League to look forward to this weekend. Well, Jan hasn't. Jan's got a weekend off of football, haven't you planned?
Yeah, I've no idea what I'm going to do. No, I'll probably tune in for the England games. Probably. In fact, I'm not going to do that.
I'm going to watch the Rugby League Super League Grand Final. Hull KR in the Grand Final for the first time ever. Losing, no doubt, to Wigan heavily, but I shall be watching that.
And listeners, yes, you've guessed it. Because it's international break, there won't be any weekend box set this week. You're up to your own devices, I'm afraid, to find something decent to watch on the telly. But yes, go with Terry. Watch the Rugby League. It is a good watch.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's going to be really interesting to see whether or not another team can win. Now, there's a competition that suffers from massive imbalance. What, I think there's only been 4 winners of the Super League since it started 30 years ago. Oh, I mean, that's so, yeah. I mean, you think we've got problems.
Yeah.
Well, we do. But by comparison to the Rugby League, we don't. But it's still a cracking sport, though. I love watching it.
So, yes, well, the Nations League is here. There's plenty of fixtures to watch. Have they sorted out the TV for it now, Terry?
No.
It's still not there.
They still haven't. No, so the good chances are if you're in the UK, you'll probably be watching it for free on the Viaplay YouTube channel without commentary. It's not a great spectacle. Just do watch something else, listeners. Just do something else with your time. Go along to a non-league game.
There is a good idea. It's not official non-league day this weekend, but you'll have a great old time. But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Tefillin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football. Or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Graham is right about many things.
Tea is not one of them.
He is wrong on matters of tea. And always has been, ever since he was in short trousers between you and me, Yanis. Always has been.
I always feel made to be very welcome at Graham's house, apart from when he says, would you like a cup of wrong tea?
I'd rather have a beer, frankly, because he's very good at that.
He is actually, I have to say, he's second to none at that.
Yeah. Tea, less so.
Yeah.
I know how I like my tea, that's all.
You do indeed. Unlike anyone else's.
And I know how everyone should like their tea.